You're tuned in to CICK 93.9 FM Smithers Community Radio. This is River Reads with host and narrator River Wild. A story hour where those of all ages can escape into bedtime stories and fairy tales, new and old, but mostly old and at times macabre or silly or even perhaps a little confusing as written in Old English, and the host sometimes fumbles the odd word or two or few. And then there's those stories whose premise or message has aged poorly. But let's face it, you can't be picky when you're dependent upon copyright-free material available through Creative Commons. So if you enjoy a narrated story and don't mind a weird tale, let's begin.
River Reads is not a kid's show, but is not a kid's show. Listener's discretion is advised.
This week, on River Reads, host narrator River Wild covers the book Nordic Tales, Folk Tales from Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland, and Denmark. Reading in no particular order, The Magician's Pupil, Death and the Doctor, The Way of the World, and Old Nick and the Girl. For more information about the tales being read, please see the write-up for this episode on whatever format you are accessing the show. For those listening live on the airwaves, please go to smithersradio.com and search River Reads. I'm your make-believe host for this show, stepping in for River Wild, who ran out of energy and could not get to recording the River Rambles portion of the show, so now you have me. I guess, after a month of organizing our local Pride event while dealing with all the backlash, on top of submitting a major grant and attending a radio conference in Calgary at the end of May, they are pooped right out. Thankfully, they were able to narrate some stories for you this week, so phew, at least there'll be a show. In the meantime, you have me. Which is actually the host creating text to voice, so technically it's really River the host, but just not in person and does not require having the AC turned off in order to create a studio recording setting. Instead, all the host has to do is type this stuff out without worrying about dogs barking and fans running in the background, and the host does not need to put themselves in order to record. So you're getting to enjoy River Rambles rambling, this way, instead. Seeing that River Wild did not read quite enough stories to fill the time, they've decided to add more music to this episode, including more original music from River Wild's personal garage band archives, Lucky You. This is episode 13, A Nordic Tale or Two, and if you're following this as a podcast, we are entering season 2. So let's get started. Seeing River does not have much more to say and there are stories to be told, let's begin.
The following is rated QM, meaning it may contain a questionable message. Those easily offended, or who do not want to engage in a possible involved discussion with your children, might want to tune back in.
In approximately 13 and a half minutes.
The Magician's Pupil. From Nordic Tales, Folk Tales from Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland, and Denmark. There was once a peasant who had a daughter, whom, when of proper age, her mother apprenticed to a trade. But the girl, who had no inclination to work, always ran home again to her parents. At this, the mother was most troubled, not knowing what course to pursue. One day she entered a church, where, after repeating the Lord's Prayer, she said, "To what trade shall I apprentice my daughter? She runs away from every place." The clerk, who happened at that moment to be standing behind the altar, hearing the peasant utter these words, called out in answer,
"Teacher, witchcraft! Teacher, witchcraft!"
The peasant, who did not see the clerk, thought it was our Lord who gave her this advice, and determined upon following it. The next day, she and her daughter said to her daughter that she should go with her, and she will find her a new situation. After walking a good way in the country, they met a shepherd tending her flock.
"Where are you going to, good woman?" inquired the shepherd.
"I am in search of a master who can teach my daughter the black art," answered the peasant.
"You may soon find her," answered the shepherd.
"Keep straight on, and go you come to a greatest wizard that to be found in all the land."
The peasant thanked her for this information and went on. Soon after, she came to a large forest.
in the middle of which stood the wizard's house. She knocked at the door. And asked the troll woman whether she had an inclination to take her daughter as a pupil.
Yes,
answered the other, but not for a less term than 4 years. And we will make this agreement that at the end of that time, you shall come. And if you can find your daughter, she shall belong to you. But should you not be able to discover her, she must remain in my house and serve me for the rest of her life. The peasant agreed to these conditions and returned home alone. At the end of the week, she began to look for her daughter's return, thinking that in this, as in all former cases, she would run away from her master. But she did not come back, and her mother began to cry. And say his wife had not acted rightly in giving their child into the power of the evil one, and that they should never see her more. After 4 years had elapsed, the peasant set out on a journey to the magicians according to their agreement. A little before she reached the forest, she met the same shepherd, who instructed her how to act so as to get her daughter back.
"When you get there," said she,
"you must at night keep your eyes constantly turned towards the fireplace, and take care not to fall asleep, for then the troll woman will convey you back to your own house. And afterwards, say you did not come at the appointed time. Tomorrow you will see 3 dogs in the yard, eating milk porridge out of a dish. The middle one is your daughter, and she is the one you must choose." The peasant thanked the shepherd for her information and bade her farewell. When she entered the house of the magician, everything took place as the shepherd had said. She was conducted into the yard, where she saw 3 dogs. 2 of them were handsome with smooth skins, but the 3rd was lean and looked ill. When the peasant patted the dogs, the 2 handsome ones growled at her, but the lean one, on the contrary, wagged her tail.
"Canst thou now tell me which of these 3 dogs is your daughter?" said the troll woman. "If so, thou canst take her with thee. If not, she belongs to me."
"Well, I will choose the one that appears the most friendly," answered the peasant, "although she looks less handsome than the others."
"That is a sensible choice," said the troll woman. "She knew what she was about. Who gave you the advice?"
The peasant was then allowed to take her daughter home with her. So, putting a cord around her neck, she went her way, bewailing that her daughter was changed into a dog.
"Oh, why do you bewailing so?" asked the shepherd as she came out of the forest. "It appears to me you have not been so very unlucky."
When she had gone a little way, the dog said to her,
"Now you shall see that my learning has been of some use to me. I will soon change myself into a little dog, and then you must sell me to those who are coming past."
The dog did as she said, and became a beautiful little creature. Soon after, a carriage came rolling along, and some great folks in it. When they saw the beautiful little dog that ran playing along the road and heard that it was for sale, they bought it of the peasant for a considerable sum. And at the same moment, the daughter changed her mother into a hare, which she caused to run across the road, while she was taken up by those who had bought her. When they saw the hare, they set the dog after it, and scarcely had they done so than both hare dog ran into the woods and disappeared. Now, the girl changed herself again, and this time both she and her mother assumed human forms. The old woman began cutting twigs, and her daughter helped her. When the people in the carriage missed the little dog, they got out to seek after it,
asking the old woman and her daughter if they had seen anything of the little dog that had run away. The girl directed them further into the woods, and she and her mother returned home and lived well on the money they had received by selling the dog. When all the money was spent, both mother and daughter resolved upon going out again in search of adventures.
"Now I will turn myself into a boar," said the youth, "and you must put a cord round my leg and take me to Holskin's market for sale. But remember to throw the cord over my right ear at the moment you sell me, and then I shall be home again as soon as you."
The peasant did as her daughter directed her, and went to the market. But she set so high a price on the boar that no one would buy it. So she continued standing in the market till the afternoon was far advanced. At length there came an old woman who brought the boar of her. This was no other than the magician who, angry that the mother had got back her daughter, had never ceased seeking after them from the time they had left her house. When the peasant had sold her boar, she threw the cord over the right ear of the girl and told her, and the same moment the animal vanished. And when she reached her own door, she again saw her daughter sitting at the table. They now lived a pleasant, merry life until all the money was spent, and then again set out on fresh adventures. This time, the daughter changed herself into a bull, first reminding her mother to throw the rope over her right ear as soon as she was sold. At the market, she met the same old woman, and soon came to an agreement. With her about the price of the bull. While they were drinking a glass together in the alehouse, the mother threw the rope over the bull's right horn, and when the magician went to fetch her purchase, it had vanished, and the peasant, upon reaching home again, found her daughter sitting by her father at the table. The third time, the girl turned herself into a horse, and the magician was again in the market and bought her.
"Thou hast already tricked me twice," said she to the peasant, "but it shall not happen again."
Before she put down the money, she hired a stable and fastened the horse in it, so that it was impossible for the peasant to throw the rein over the animal's right ear. The old woman, nevertheless, returned home in hope that this time also she should find her daughter. But she was disappointed, for no girl was there. The magician, in the meantime, mounted the horse and rode off. She well knew whom she had bought, and determined that the girl should pay with her life the deception she had practiced upon her. She led the horse through swamps and pools and galloped a pace that, had she long continued it, she must have ridden the animal to death. But the horse was a hard trotter, and the magician, being old, she at last found she had not got her master, and was therefore obliged to ride home. When she arrived at her house, she put a magic bridle on the horse and shut her in a dark stable without giving her anything either to eat or drink. When some time had elapsed, she said to the servant maid,
"Go out and see how the horse is."
When the boy came into the stable, the metamorphosed girl, who had been the boy's sweetheart while she was in the troll's house, began to moan piteously and begged him to give her a pail of water. He did so, and on his return told him master the horse was well. Some time after, she again desired him to go out and see if the horse were not yet dead. When he entered the stable, the poor animal begged him to loose the rein and the girths, which were strapped so tight that she could hardly draw breath. The boy did as he was requested, And no sooner was it done than the girl changed herself into a hare and ran out of the stable. The magician, who was sitting in the window, was immediately aware of what had happened. On seeing the hare go springing across the yard and instantly changing herself into a dog, went in pursuit of it. When they had ran many miles over cornfields and meadows, the girl's strength began to fail, and the magician gained more and more upon her. The hare then changed herself into a dove, but the magician as quickly turned herself into a hawk and pursued her afresh. In this manner, they flew towards a palace where a prince was sitting at the window. When he saw a hawk in chase of a dove, he opened the window, and immediately the dove flew into the room, and then changed itself into a gold ring. The magician now became a princess, and went into the apartment for the purpose of catching the dove. When she could not find it, she asked permission to see his gold rings. The prince showed them to her, but let one fall into the fire. The troll woman instantly drew it out, in doing which she burnt her fingers and was obliged to let it fall on the floor. The girl now knew of no better course than to change herself into a grain of corn. At the same moment, the magician became a hen in order to eat the corn. But scarcely had she done so than the girl became a hawk and killed her. She then went to the forest, fetched all the magician's gold and silver, and from that day lived in wealth and happiness with her parents.
The following is rated PGD, meaning it contains possible gore or death. It's pretty tame, but someone is killed. Sensitive viewers may want to tune back in.
In about 9.5 minutes.
Death and the Doctor. From Norway, in the Nordic Tales, folk tales from Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland, and Denmark. Once on a time, there was a lad who had lived as a servant a long time with a man of the North Country. This man was a master at ale brewing. It was so out of the way good that like of it was not to be found. So, when the lad was to leave his place and the man was to pay him the wages he had earned, he would take no other pay than the keg of a Yule ale. Well, he got it and set off with it, and he carried it both far and long. But the longer he carried the keg, the heavier it got. And so he began to look about to see if anyone were coming and with whom he might have a drink, that the ale might lessen and the keg lighten. And after a long, long time, he met an old man with a big beard.
"Good day," said the man. "Good day to you," said the lad.
"Whither away?" asked the man.
"I'm looking after some one to drink with and get my keg lightened," said the lad.
"Can't you drink as well with me as with anyone else?" said the man. "I have both far and wide, and I am both tired and thirsty."
"Well, why shouldn't I?" said the lad. "But tell me, whence do you come, and what sort of man are you?"
"I am our lord, and come from heaven," said the man.
"Thee will I not drink with," said the lad, "for those Marcus such distinction between persons here in the world, and share us rights so unevenly that some get so rich and some so poor. No, with thee I will not drink." And as he said this, he trotted off with his keg again. So when he had gone a bit further, the keg grew too heavy again. He thought he should not carry it any longer, unless someone came and with whom he could drink, and so lessen the ale in the keg. Yes, he met an ugly, scrawny man who came along fast and furious.
"Good day," said the man.
"Good day to you," said the lad.
"Whither away?" asked the man.
"Oh, I'm looking for someone to drink with and get my keg lightened," said the lad.
Can't you drink with me as well as with anyone else?
Said the man.
I have fared both far and wide, and I am tired and thirsty.
Well, why not? Said the lad. But who are you, and whence do you come?
Who am I? I am the devil, and I come from hell. And that's where I come from, said the man.
No, said the lad, thou only pinest and plaguest poor folk, and if there is any unhappiness astir, they always say it is thy fault. Thee I will not drink with. So he went far and farther, then far again, with his ale keg on his back, till, thought it grew so heavy, there was no carrying it any further. He began to look around again, if anyone were coming with whom he could drink and lighten his keg. So after a long, long time, another man came, and he was so dry and lean, 'twas a wonder his bones hung together.
Good day, said the man.
Good day to you, said the lad.
Whither away?
Asked the man. Oh, I was only looking about to see if I could find someone to drink with, that my keg might be lightened a little. It is so heavy to carry.
Can't you drink as well with me as with anyone else? Said the man.
Yes, why not? Said the lad. But what sort of man are you?
They call me Death, said the man.
The very man for my money, said the lad. Thee I am glad to drink with. And as he said this, he put down his keg and began to tap the ale into a bowl. Thou art an honest, trustworthy man, for thou treatest all alike, both rich and poor. So he drank his health, and Death drank his health, and Death said he had never tasted such drink, and as the lad was fond of him, they drank bowl and bowl about, till the ale was lessened, and the keg grew light. At last Death said,
I have never known drink with which smacked better, or did me so much good as this ale that you have given me. And I scarce know what to give you in return.
But after he had thought a while, he said the keg should never get empty, however much they drank out of it, and that the ale was in it should become a healing drink, by which the lad could make the sick whole again better than any doctor. And he also said that when the lad came into the sick man's room, Death would always be there and show himself to him. And it should be to him for a sure token if he saw Death at the foot of the bed that he could cure the sick with a draught from the keg. But if he sat by the pillow, and there was no healing nor medicine, for then the sick belonged to Death. Well, the lad soon grew famous and was called in far and near, and he helped many to health again who had been given over. When he came in and saw how Death sat by the sick man's bed, he foretold either life or death, and his foretelling was never wrong. He got both rich and powerful man, and at last he was called in to the king's daughter, far, far away in the world. She was so dangerously ill, no doctor thought he could do her any good, and so they promised him all that he cared either to ask or have, if he would only save her life. Now, when he came into the princess's room, there sat Death at her pillow. But as he sat, he dozed and nodded. And when he did this, she felt herself better.
Now life or death is at stake, said the doctor.
and I fear, from which I see, there is no hope. But they said he must save her, if it cost land and realm. So he looked at death, and while he sat there and dozed again, he made a sign to the servants to turn the bed round so quickly that death was sitting at the foot. And at that very moment they turned the bed, the doctor gave her the draught, and her life was saved.
"Now you have cheated me," said Death, "and we are quits."
"I was forced to do it," said the doctor, "unless I wished to lose land and realm."
"That shan't help you much," said Death. "Your time is up. For now, you belong to me."
"Well," said the lad, "what must be, must be. But you'll let me have time to read the Lord's Prayer first?" Yes, he might have leave to do that, but he took very good care not to read the Lord's Prayer. Everything else he read, but the Lord's Prayer never crossed his lips. And at last he thought he had cheated Death for good and all. But when Death thought he had really waited too long, he went to the lad's house one night and hung up a great tablet with the Lord's Prayer painted it over against his bed. So when the lad woke in the morning, he began to read the tablet and did not quite see what it was about till he came to Amen. But then it was just too late, and Death had him.
And now, for a portion of the show that is only lightly edited, aka, we lost steam editing the show but still wanted to share the work that had been completed. Which is a nice way of saying, don't expect any of the usual bells and whistles, such as the host talking, other than story narration, or any of the usual sound effects or story ratings being provided. That said, as the following stories may be disturbing to some listeners, listener discretion is advised for the remainder of the show. Now sit back and take in the simplicity of hearing a couple of weird tales narrated by host River Wild. Enjoy.
This is CICK 93.9 FM Smithers Community Radio, and you're listening to River Reads with host narrator River Wild. As a nonprofit, we rely on sponsors like Bulkley Valley Brewing Company, located at 3860 First Avenue in Smithers. Bulkley Valley Brewing Company craft beer that showcases the best that the Bulkley Valley has to offer and will quench your thirst after a big day of doing whatever it is that you love. Open Sunday and Monday till 8 p.m., Tuesday and Wednesdays till 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturdays till 10 p.m. Thank you, Bulkley Valley Brewing Company, for supporting local community radio. We return now to your regular programming.
The Way of the World, from Norway. From Nordic Tales, folk tales from Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland, and Denmark. Once on a time, there was a man who went into the wood to cut hoop poles, but he could find no trees so long and straight and slender as he wanted, till he came high up under a great heap of stones. There he heard groans and moans, as though some were of death's door. So he went up to see who was in the needed help. And then he heard that the noise came from under a great flat stone which lay upon the heap. It was so heavy it would have taken many men to lift it. But the man went down again into the wood and cut down a tree, which he turned into a lever. And with that he tilted up the stone. And lo, out from under it crawled a dragon, and made at the man to swallow him up. But the man said he had saved the dragon's life, and it was shameful thanklessness in him to want to eat him up.
"Maybe," said the dragon, "but you might very well know I must be starved when I have been here hundreds of years and never tasted meat. Besides, it's the way of the world. That's how it pays its debts."
The man pleaded his case
stoutly and begged prettily for his life. And at last they agreed to take the first living thing that came from for a daysman. And if his doom went the other way, the man should not lose his life. But if he said the same at the dragon should eat the man. The first thing that came was an old hound, who ran along the road down below, under the hillside. Him they spoke to, and begged him to be judge.
"Good news," said the hound. "I have served my master truly ever since I was a little whelp. I have watched and watched many and many a night through which, while he lay warm asleep in his ear, and I have saved house and home from fire and thieves more than once. But now I can neither see nor hear any more, and he wants to shoot me. And so I must run away and slink from house to house and beg for my living till I die of hunger. No, it's the way of the world," said the hound. "That's how it pays its debts."
"Now I am coming to eat you up," said the dragon, and tried to swallow the man again.
But the man begged and prayed hard for his life, till they agreed to take the next corner for a judge. And if he said the same as the dragon and the hound, the dragon must eat him up and get a meal of a man's meat. But if he did not say so, the man was to get off with his life. So there came an old horse limping down along the road, which ran under the hill. Him they called out to come and settle the dispute. Yes, he was quite ready to do that.
"Now I have served my master," said the horse, "as long as I could draw or carry. I've slaved and striven with him till the sweat trickled from every hair, and I have worked till I have grown lame and halt, and worn out with toil and age. Now I am fit for nothing. I am not worth my food, and so I am to have a bullet through me." He says, "Nay, nay, it's the way of the world. That's how the world pays its debts."
"Well, now I'm coming to eat you," said the dragon, who gaped wide and wanted to swallow the man.
But he begged again hard for his life. But the dragon said he must have a mouthful of a man's meat. He was so hungry he couldn't bear it any longer. "See yonder come one who looks as if he was sent to be judge between us," said the man as he pointed to Reynard the fox, who came stealing between the stones of the heap. "All good things are there?" "Are three," said the man. "Let me ask him two, and if he gives doom like the others, eat me up on the spot."
"Very well," said the dragon.
He too had heard that all good things were three, and so it should be a bargain. So the man talked to the fox as he had talked to the others.
"Yes, yes," said Reynard. "I see how it is all is."
But as he said this, he took the man a little one to one side.
"What will you give me if I free you from the dragon?"
he whispered into the man's ear. "You shall be free to come to my house and to be lord and master over my hens and geese every Thursday night," said the man.
"Well, my dear dragon," said Reynard, "this is a very hard nut to crack. I can't get him into my head how you, who are so big and mighty a beast, could find room to lie under yon stone."
"Can't you?" said the dragon. "Well, I lay under the hillside and sunned myself, and down came a landslip and hurled the stones over me."
"Ah, very likely, I dare say," said Reynard. "But still I can't understand it. And what's more, I won't believe it till I see it." So the man said they had better prove it, and the dragon crawled down into his hole again. But In the twinkling of an eye, they whipped out the lever, and down the stone crashed again on the dragon.
"Now lie there till doomsday," said the fox.
"You would eat the man, would you, who saved your life?" The dragon groaned and moaned and begged hard to come out, but the two went their way and left him alone. The very first Thursday night, Reynard came to be lord and master over the hen roost and hid himself behind a great pile of wood hard by. When the maid went to feed the fowls, in stole Reynard. She neither saw nor heard anything of him, but her back was scarce tuned before he had sucked blood enough for the week and stuffed himself so that he couldn't stir. So when she came again in the morning, there Reynard lay and snored and slept in the morning sun, with all four of his legs stretched straight, and he was as sleek and round as a German sausage. Away ran the lassie for the goody, and she came, and all the lasses with her, with sticks and brooms to beat Reynard, and to tell the truth, they nearly banged the life out of him. But just as he was almost all over with him, and he thought his last hour was come, he found a hole in the floor, and so crept out, and limped and hobbled off to the wood.
"Oh," said Reynard, "how true it is. 'Tis the way of the world, and this is how it pays its debts."
Old Nick and the Girl from Sweden. In the Nordic Tales, folk tales from Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland, and Denmark. There was once a girl who was so mad about dancing that she nearly went out of her mind whenever she heard a fiddle strike up. She was a very clever dancer and a smarter girl. To whirl round and dance or kick her heels was not easily to be found, although she only had shoes made of birch bark and knitted leggings on her feet. She swept past at such a rate that the air whistled round her like a hummingbird. She might have whirled around still more quickly and lightly, of course, if she'd had leather shoes. But how was she to get them when she had no money to pay for them? For she was very poor, this girl, and could ill afford them. So one day, when the fair was being held at Amberg's Heath, whom should she meet but Old Nick? He was going to see the fun of the fair, as you may guess, for all sorts of tramps and vagabonds and well-watched dealers and rogues go there, and where such gentry are to be found, others of the same feather are sure to flock together.
"What are you thinking about?" asked Old Nick,
who knew well enough how matters stood.
"I was wondering how I shall be able to get a pair of leather shoes to dance in," said the girl. "For I haven't any money to pay for them," she said.
"Is that all? We'll soon get over that," said Old Nick, and produced a pair of leather shoes, which he showed her. "Do you like these?" he asked.
The girl stood staring at the shoes. She could never have believed that there were such fine, splendid shoes, for they were not common ones sewn with pitched thread, but real German shoes with welted soles and looked as French as one could wish.
"Is there a spring in them as well?" she asked.
"Yes, that may be sure of," said Old Nick. "Do you want them?"
Yes, that she did. There could be no doubt about that. And so they began bargaining and higgling about the payment, till at last they came to terms. She was to have the shoes for a whole year for nothing, if only she would dance in his interest, and afterwards she should belong to him. She did not exactly make a good bargain, but Old Nick is not a person who can bargain with. But there was to be such a spring in them that no human being would be able to swing around quicker in a dance or kick higher than she did. And if she did not satisfy her, and if they did not satisfy her, he would take them back for nothing,
and she should be free. With this, they parted. And now the girl seemed to wake up thoroughly. She thought of nothing else but going to dances, wherever they might be, night after night. Well, she danced and danced, and before she knew it, the year came to an end, and old Nick came and asked for his due.
"They were a rubbishy pair of shoes you gave me," said the girl. "There was no spring at all in them," she said.
"Wasn't there any spring in the shoes? Oh, that's very strange," said old Nick.
"No, there wasn't," said the girl. "Why, my bark shoes are far better, and I can get on much faster in them than in these wretched things."
"You twist about as if you were dancing," said old Nick. "But now I think you will have to dance away with me after all."
"Well, if you don't believe my words, I suppose you'll believe your eyes," she said. "Put on those grand shoes of yours and try them yourself," she said. "And I'll put on my bark shoes, and then we'll have a race. And so you can see what they are good for," she said.
Well, that was reasonable enough, he thought, and no doubt he felt there was little danger in trying it. So they agreed to race to the end of Lake Fryken and back, one on each side of the lake, which, as you know, is a very long one indeed. If she came in first, she was to be free, but if she came in last, she was to belong to him. But the girl had to run home first of all, for she had a roll of cloth for the parson, which she must deliver before she tried her speed with old Nick. Very well, that she might, for he went in fear of the parson, but the race should take place on the third day afterwards. Now, as bad luck would have it for old Nick, it so happened that the girl had a sister, who was so like her that it was impossible to know from one from the other, for they were twins, the two girls. But the sister was not mad about dancing, so old Nick had not got scent of her. The girl now asked her sister to place herself at Frykstad, the south end of the lake, and she herself took on her position at Fryskin, the north of it. She had the bark shoes on, and old Nick the leather ones, and so they set off, each on their side of the lake. The girl did not run very far, for she knew well enough how little running she did need to do. But old Nick set off at full speed, much faster than one can ride on the railway. But when he came to Frystad, he found the girl already there. And when he came back to Frysend, there she was too.
"Well, you see now," said the girl.
"Oh, of course I see," said old Nick. But he was not the man to give in at once. "One time is no time, that you know," he said.
"Well, let's have another try," said the girl. Yes, that he would, for the soles of his shoes were almost worn out, and then he knew what state the bark shoes would be in. They set off the second time, and old Nick ran so fast that the air whistled round the corner of the house in San and Emmerich parishes. But when he came to Frystad, the girl was already there. And when he got back to Frysend, she was there before him this time also.
"Can you see now who comes in first?" said she.
"Yes, of course I can," said old Nick, and began to dry the perspiration off his face, thinking all the time, what a wonderful runner the girl must be. "But you know," he said, "twice is hardly half a time. It's the third time that counts."
"Let's have another try then," said the girl.
Yes, he said he would, for old Nick is very sly, and know, for when the leather shoes were so worn to pieces that his feet were bleeding, and he knew well enough that the state the bark shoes would be in. And so they set off. Old Nick went a terrible speed. It was just like a regular northwestern rushing past, for now he was furious. He rushed onwards so that the roofs were swept away and fences creaked and groaned at the
way through San and Emmerich parishes. But when he got to Freistad, the girl was there. And when he got back to Freisend, then she was there too. His feet were now in such a plight that the flesh hung in pieces from them, and was so out of breath and groaned so hard, and the sound echoed in the mountains. The girl almost pitied the old creature, disgusting as he was.
"Do you see now?" she said. "That there's a better spring in my bark shoes than in your leather ones. There's nothing left of yours, while mine will hold out for another run, if you would like to try," she said.
No, old Nick had now to acknowledge himself beaten, and so she was free. "I've never seen the like of such a woman," he said. "But if you go on dancing and jumping about like that all your days, we are sure to meet once again," he said.
"Oh, no,"
said the girl. And since then, she has never danced again. For it is not every time that you can succeed in getting away from old Nick.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the radio station and any entities they represent. In addition, the stories and any possible twisted messages relayed do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the host, twisted as they are and despite what they might tell you, or the radio station, or their affiliates, or any entities they represent, and solely are those of the author, if even that, for that matter. Also, just now, I'm referring to the host being twisted, not the station being twisted, even if they happen to be so, and that's all I'm saying about that.
As a nonprofit, we rely on sponsors like Bulkley Valley Brewing Company. Thank you, Bulkley Valley Brewing Company, for supporting local community radio.
This is CICK 93.9 FM Smithers Community Radio, and you have been listening to River Reads with your host, River Wild. For more River Reads, tune in weekly every Saturday at 10 a.m. See you then.